some history. All this spectrum imaging stuff was first tried in remote sensing. So people are looking from the sky or from the satellites to classify the land area, the forestry, water, mineral, everything. And in those times it was used only for, only with a few number of bands. It was an extension of spectroscopy, and they were very clear about what they were looking at. So it was possible to find out information just with a few bands. So this is one of the paper which came out in, I think, 85, in Science, about imaging spectroscopy for Earth remote sensing. So you can see that some of the challenges that we have mentioned here, it can, imaging spectroscopy, which can give you a lot of information to classify different elements on the surface of Earth, surface materials using spectral imaging, but at the same time, storage of such potentially massive data. So it was a challenge from the very beginning. Now, the storage facilities has increased, but still it's a challenge. Storage has increased, but at the same time, the amount of data that we could capture is also increased. This was something like, okay, 100 to 200 spectral bands. So the data could be reduced using many different ways. We can also get the spectra, reduce the spatial information. That means you can have one pixel here, next pixel here. So it could be placed in a more spaced areas and then less information, but you can have more in the spectral range. Some specifications of spectral imaging, for example, if you are going to use a spectral camera for a specific application, maybe some of these things will be the most considered specifications. Spectral range. I think some of you asked me whether it is sensitive to all range. No. It can be classified into VNIR or visible and near IR, shortwave IR, midwave IR, longwave IR. So the same sensor could be used for, this is mainly, this classification is, one reason is that the sensor used for visible and near IR cannot be used for capturing shortwave IR. We need to use a different sensor. And the sensor for shortwave IR cannot be used for midwave IR. So it's a basically different sensors. Some of these cameras you need different cooling mechanisms. If you remember the cameras in Color Lab, we have a veneer camera and a shortwave IR camera. The shortwave IR camera is heavy, different cooling mechanism, different sensor, and everything is different. Even because we use a different sensor, the spatial resolution is also different. So everything is different. Then spectral resolution, basically how many channels do we use? That's a spectral resolution. Spatial resolution, how many pixels it can capture. The camera we have at Color Lab, one of the camera, veneer camera, can capture 1800 pixels. Shortwave IR camera can capture 384 pixels. So that's a resolution, spatial resolution. Any doubts so far? But I said, I have a doubt. I said, 1800 pixels. It's only just, so how do you imagine 1800 pixels? How can I capture, how can I just say that's the resolution? How would you normally say the resolution of if your mobile phone?
Width and height.
Width and height, but I just said only one direction. You did not ask me why. So how is it possible just with one direction I specify the resolution? Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's close to that. Yeah. So that way I will explain, maybe. Keep that in your mind. I will explain that in the coming slides. So then that's a special resolution. One camera 1800, the other camera 384. Then the responsivity. So how responsive? Sometimes the cameras are not responsive as we wish. So the responsivity of the camera that we had to specify. Number of bands, which is very closely related with the spectral resolution. The frame rate, how many frames it can capture. Then the detector type, number of bits it can capture. Do you know how many bits we normally process in a normal image? 8-bit is very normal. But in scientific cameras, it could be 12 bits, 14 bits, 16 bits. We call it 16 bits, but maybe not all the bits would be used for storing the pixel information. Some information, some meta information would also be stored in the bands. Then file formats. There are different file formats which I will talk. Then the instrument architecture, so it's more deep into the specifications. What kind of architecture, for example, what kind of mechanism is used, what's the spectral range, what's the signal to noise. We will come back to this, and after I just take a tour about different technologies we use. One is a multi-spectral camera, filter wheel based multi-spectral camera. Have you seen a filter-based multispectral camera? It's in one of the labs that we have. Have you been to the bunker room?
Yes.
So there is a camera with a filter wheel. Basically, you can imagine it like you have a camera, you see like this, just one sensor, a monochrome camera. Then in front of this monochrome camera, there will be a wheel, a rotating wheel, and in this rotating wheel, you will see different. Maybe the camera that we have 8 different holes, and or in every hole there will be a filter, and that filter will pass only specific range of wavelength. So that means, for example, one could just transmit light from 430 to 460, and then the image which is, or the light falling on the sensor, is only corresponding to this region. Everything outside of that region will be blocked. So the pass band for that specific filter would be only in this region. The next filter, so what will happen is that when you operate this camera, it will take a picture when one filter is in front of the camera, it takes a picture, and then it will rotate, takes another picture. Maybe the next one will be corresponding to 500 to 550. Doesn't need to be the same width, it can be a different width. Then after the second one, third filter will come, it takes a picture. Is it clear? This is a sim is
Wouldn't the sensors need to be tuned for specific frequencies anyway? Why would you need a filter in that case?
So, if there is no filter in front of the sensor, it is sensitive to all the range. Now we are passing only a specific wavelength or a specific range of wavelength, and then it captures light only in that wavelength.
Okay, so the sensors in the camera will just capture all of the visible wavelengths.
Yeah, it is sensitive to all the visible
Okay,
region.
gotcha.
So if you don't have any filter in front of the camera, it will just simply take the average of all the light. And if you place a filter, then it will capture only that narrow wavelength.
Yes.
The sensors also have a sensitivity curve.
Yeah.
So is it like the sensor has a very monotone
No.
sensitivity?
No.
So how does that work? Like, I am using a filter, that is emitting a specific band, maybe the filter is not that sensitive
mm-hmm.
to that part of the band.
Mm-hmm.
So is there some sort of a, how does it work?
We can measure. Normally the manufacturer of the camera give us the sensitivity of the camera.
Huh.
Or else we can measure the sensitivity of the camera. That's a way. So for example, the silicon based sensors, CCD sensors,
mm-hmm.
the sensitivity reduce so in this region, or so the it's not the exact curve, but normally the silicon-based sensors have less sensitivity close to the UV range and less sensitivity close to the IR range. So how can we find it? If you take a picture with a silicon-based sensor, you will find that the image would be more noisy in that region. If you want to reduce the noise in that region, you need to put more light. And then it will compensate. So there are different mechanisms to compensate or avoid such noisy images. One method is like you can put an optical filter which will pass more light. So what will happen if I want to expose this area and this space, this area with more light, then what could happen? If you expose any object with more light and if you take a picture, what could happen? It will be saturated, right? So if I to get a better image in this region and in this region, I can expose more light, but here it is already, there is a good sensitivity,
mm-hmm.
then it will be saturated.
So the incident light is balanced based on the sensitivity curve of the sensor, so that you would get some sort of a same response, so that the differences would show.
Yeah. So we can use equalization filters. I didn't mean to present that in this session, but I can say that we can use equalization filters, which has a... So this means that filter will pass more light here and reduce the light in this region, so that even if you expose more light, it will be attenuated here, and so no saturation. At the same time, it will pass more light here and it will be less noisy. You understood the basics? Okay, very good. So, filter with multispectral camera, this is how it works. And next time when you go to the lab, you can find out. And if you ask who are showing you the camera, then you could also see some kind of sound. It's basically rotating. And your question about the sensitivity, it is possible to set up in the camera different integration type. So if the sensor is less sensitive in some area, you can increase the integration type. You know what is integration type? Or it's the same as exposure time. In the normal camera, if you have a DSLR, you can adjust the exposure time. Right? So, for example, if you are capturing light in close to 1000 nanometer, you can have a higher exposure time. That means the shutter will open for longer time to get more photons. This could be decided based on the histogram. Some drawbacks of filter wheel. So, it's limited range. You cannot put more than 8 or 10 different filters, because it's a mechanical moving stuff, noisy, And that mechanical part could also introduce noises into the image, because you are putting different filters. Maybe the filters has different thickness, and that could. So, ideally, I should be getting. I take one picture with one filter, next image with the second filter, and if the filter, it's basically optical filters. If the filter has different thickness, maybe the light will be diverted a little bit differently, and then the registration will not be the same. So the one here may not be corresponding to the one here. So there could be noises in that way, geometrical distortions. And when you have, if you are making a hole, as I said, at one here, and if it touch on 1, 2 here, then the spectrum will not be the right spectrum. It will be a noisy spectrum, and you cannot really use that for anything. So those are some problems. Then slow speed. It will take a while to take all the pictures. If it is, even if it is only 8, it will still take a minute or even more. Depends on what kind of objects. When I say why it is depends on the object. So why this filter wheel stuff or any camera take different duration for capturing the data based on the object? If it is a dark kind of object, you may need to expose more light to get a good signal. So that means depends on the scene, what you are capturing, you may have to adjust the exposure time. And based on that, it can take longer time. As I said, image misregistration is another issue. This is the filter wheel we have at Cloud Lab. Then another way of capturing multispectral imaging is LCTF, liquid crystal tunable filter. Here, as you see, there is the blue stuff is basically the sensor, the monochrome camera. The what you see as a black color here is a liquid crystal. So based on the voltage that you apply on this liquid crystal, it changes the passband. That means on a specific voltage, it will pass a specific wavelength. And if you change that, it will pass another wavelength. So it normally works in the visible and near IR region. Much better, there is no moving parts here. So there is no chance of a misregistration. In the other one, there was a moving part, and which could cause the misregistration. And then it will take longer time sometimes, because in certain region, the passband is not very efficient. That means you need to expose longer time to get a good signal. So because of that, it takes. That's a disadvantage of liquid crystal tunable filter. Peter, should we take a break, or we go finish?
It depends on the content, or if you.
I can manage. So if you take.
Should we take 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Then we continue until 12.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. We regather at 20 past.
They could not fix.
Yeah, it's all.
is there a blue lamp? I don't see that, Peter.
No.
Do you see?
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's a blue box, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. Okay, then we continue.
Yes.
Any questions so far? Okay. Then what are the basic elements in a spectral imaging system? So you have seen there is some optics which will disperse the light into different components. Or sometimes we need to focus the light. You have seen in case of a filter wheel camera, the optics what you see in the front is basically taking care of focusing the image, getting into the filter. So here the dispersive element is basically, the filter is acting as a dispersive element, basically separating the light into different components. Then there is a sensor on the back side of the dispersive element. Then there is a processing unit for handling the data. In addition to this, there is also different references that we use. References in the sense, there could be color checker, which you might have already seen. Have you? Color checker?
Color checkers, yes.
There could be geometrical references, like a grid image or a mesh image. Can you guess why we use geometrical references? Just to see if there is any geometrical distortions. And then references called reflectance targets. These are standard references. And have you seen this before? No. This is used for used as a spectral reference. And just focus on just one area. I will tell you later why four different shades. But for example, this white area, it reflects light almost 99%. So when we put this target in the scene, if I'm scanning, this is my target. For example, I want to study my skin. So while I'm scanning my skin, I will also scan this one. By scanning this one, I get information on how much light I am exposed. Right? So there is no other way to measure the light. So I get those information using this kind of targets.
Remember, you used the spectralon tile in the bunker. So
this is a spectralon, expensive one. Even though you see this may cost like $30,000. So this is a spectralon reference. Then, in order to, if you want to capture some light, you need to first illuminate the scene. So then we use different light sources. So if you want to capture light in the visible and near infrared region, you need to illuminate the scene with a light source which has light in that range. So if you want to capture light in the shortwave IR, then you need to illuminate light in that region. So we need to choose the light source based on which region of electromagnetic spectrum we are capturing. Just to want to give an indication about different sensors that we use here. For example, 400 to 1000 nanometer, which is the visible region, we could use a silicon sensor. The near IR, 900 to 1700 nanometer, we can use the indium gallium arsenide sensor. S-sphere, different sensor. So, different kind of sensors. Then detector type. Some detectors are able to capture only one dimension. Now, you remember why I said only one dimension in 1800 pixels. It was only one dimension. It's not a 2D sensor. It's only one direction. So that means it may be capturing just one line, not the other region. So if I want to capture, so it will capture just one line at a time. And if I want to capture the next line, I will move the object. So there are one dimensional sensors and two dimensional sensors. So these are examples of different way of capturing spectral images. So here you see a filter camera. So that means the multispectral wheel that you have seen. So that will capture one wavelength at a time, an image corresponding to one wavelength at a time. That's the first image that you see, the orange one, this one. And so again, the book example. First image with the first filter, then the second image with the second filter, and so on. Then there is sensor technology called Viskabrum spectrometer that will capture the whole point, the whole, for example, point 1, 1, it will capture the whole depth. And then it will move to the next point and measure the next one and so on. So there will be a mechanical moving system which will move it, so move it up to every point. And then there is another sensor called push-broom spectrometer. Push-broom basically means, you know, brooming. Just like the broomstick that you use, it will just broom. That means we have such a sensor in the lab. The hyperspectral camera that you have seen is basically a push-broom sensor. So that means it's a line scanner. You have seen the camera will be staying like this. And then there is a moving platform. That means it will take the first line, it will record the first line, and then it will move to the next line. This the sample will move, and it will capture the next line, and then so on. So the 1800 pixels I mentioned is the resolution of one line. And then it moves to the next line. So the width factor, which you normally call in case of normal image or width or length, is based on how many steps it will move. So for example, this is 1800 pixels in this width, and then this is another 1800, and so on. So if you move it 100 times, then the width is basically 100. Or the length is 100. Is it clear now? Yes. This is very commonly used kind of technology, the push-pull sensor. Mm-hmm. It will take more time. There could be chances of different distortions, but you know, having a hyperspectral camera in an aircraft or a UAV, and it's easy to control the speed and the brooming mechanism works. Then the snapshot imaging. There are different snapshots. For example, you take just one shot and you get all the different bands. It cannot really give both spectral and spatial resolution at the same time. So that's four different kind of way to capture the images. So this is a portable hyperspectral camera that we have. It looks like a snapshot device. There is no moving mechanism that you can see from outside, but there is a moving push-broom sensor inside. Looking at this, it's a less expensive, more portable. It's I think it's 1.2 kilograms. It can produce 204 bands. The main drawback is the resolution. So it can capture only 512 into 512 pixels. So you can keep it at any distance more than 15 centimeter. But then 512 pixels is not enough to see the details. If you actually take the picture from a long distance, you will see many blocks.
So what type of applications can this camera be used for?
You can, okay, this is a veneer camera, visible and near infrared camera with a sensitivity from 400 to 1000 nanometer. You can use it for almost all close range applications. For example, I will tell that in the session after lunch. For example, forensics. If you want to scan a forensic scene, suppose there is a murder happened and you want to take a picture of the scene, you could use this camera and get the whole information in that scene using this camera. It's hard to bring a camera with a lot of moving mechanism in some situations. As I said, it has a poor resolution. So we take the cameras to the museum, sometimes to see underdrawings. But there is no guarantee that there is underdrawings for every painting. So it's possible to take this camera in our bag and go to a museum, take a picture. and see whether we can, there is a underdrawing. And if that is of interest, then we can take a high resolution camera later. So it's possible to use it for a first preliminary study. If you see that there is a lot of interest, then we can also go for a high-end camera. I think you will see this camera very often in every place here that you go in Kosi. I think all the partners have this camera. You have two. hyperspectral mobile phone camera. There was some news a few years back, I think it's 2016, that there are developments happening in a mobile phone hyperspectral camera, but there is not much updates later, but people tried. This is from the news from VTT, the Finnish research organization. This is another update on hyperspectral phone camera used for medical imaging. This paper is from 2020. I share this slide so you can read more details about it. And those who are going to specialize on one of these, it's also possible to discuss more detail, but I'm not planning to do that now. There was a thesis, CMET thesis. CMET, you know, the COSI, before COSI it was CMET. So there was a thesis in 2014 about mobile phone camera possibilities for spectral imaging. You can read it, it's online, so you can get it. Hyperspectral video camera. So this is something used for example, for surveillance, for autonomous vehicles, for those kind of purposes. Normally the resolution is not very high. It's 125 bands. The spatial resolution is not that high. When you increase the spatial resolution, the spectral resolution decreases. This is a underwater hyperspectral camera. This is a spin-off from NTNU Trondheim. So there is a group working on this one. So you can see there is a different depth rating. This is a veneer camera used for underwater imaging. One is a half kilometer, 500 meters, and the other one can go up to a depth of 3000 meters. We have used this for scanning the lake Mjøsa. We did this in 2021 just to study there are many artifacts in the lake, so the plan was to study that. Many people from Kalar Lab, they're involved in this one, but the robot is from NTNU Trondheim, from the cybernetics department. So this is a color checker, basically made of ceramic, which we put in the bottom of and then took the picture. You can see this in the lab. And if you talk to Hilda Deborah, she was involved in this project, and she will share you more details. Okay, so now the story takes next step about the basic image acquisition workflow. This workflow is almost same in all the cases. So whatever kind of imaging mechanism that you use, whether it is veneer or shortwave IR or whatever, this workflow is almost the same. So it's good to be aware of what's happening. So when you take an image with any camera, you know about, you get a raw image. With a scientific camera, you get a raw image. And then, have you heard about dark current? Yeah. So dark current is the signal generated in a camera when there is no light. Ideally, when you close the lid of a camera, there shouldn't be any signal in the sensor, right? But that's the ideal case. In reality, there would be some signals. So if you close your the lens with a lid and take a picture, and you may see a dark image, But if you start open that in MATLAB or Python, if you start looking at the data, there will be some information. And that information is the undesired information, which we don't want. So we normally subtract that from the original image. So that's a dark current correction. It's a part of any scientific imaging. Sometimes this is done by the system, but it's happening there. And then there is a sensor calibration. So there was a question about, oh, the sensor is not sensitive in all the ranges as the same sensitivity. So there need to be a calibration based on the sensitivity of the camera. That will be done in the second stage in any spectral imaging system. Then a uniform surface image which will be captured, for example, we need to do the illumination correction. So that means if I am capturing this scene, I would definitely illuminate the scene with a light source, right? Because I want photons to be reflected from this object and come back to my camera. But if I want to convert this into reflections, then I need to make sure that the light falling on every point is the same. Just ask me questions if you have any doubts at any point. So I need to make sure that my light source is uniform throughout the area, throughout the scene. If not, I need to capture that and then correct it. Right? So I can use the reference targets like this one to do that job, because I would know how many photons is falling here and how many photons is falling over the whole area. And if the light is not uniform, I will get that. And I can use that non-uniformity information to do the correction. Right? Not just in one line, but the whole area. So that will happen in the third stage. Then the next stage is spectral calibration. So now we have done the uniform light correction. Next is spectral calibration. That means this spectral on tile, have you seen this spectrum of the spectral on tile? So the white one, I can say that it will reflect 99%. But it's not reflecting 99% in all the wavelengths. It will be different. So I'm just plotting the reflectance spectrum of this part. So, it may be 99 for this point, it may be 98 for this point, and so on. So for every nanometer, there is a different reflectance. You got the point? Yes. So, based on that, we need to do the correction on the scene. So do you know why I use this one? Why do we use this one? Along with the scene, that will take us to the very basics of converting an image into its reflectance. So what's the reflectance? So how do I calculate the reflectance? This definitely you should answer. Yes. Yeah. So reflectance is equal to reflected light divided by illuminated light. refracted light divided by illuminated light. So if I am putting 100 photons to this one, and if I am getting only 50 photons back into the camera, then this is 50 divided by, I'm sending 100 photons and I'm getting back 50 photons in my camera, then it's 50 divided by 100, so we can say that the reflectance is 50%, correct? And in this case, as I said, it's around 99%. That means if I send 100 photons, I get 99 photons back to my camera, okay? So the intention of keeping this one in the scene is basically, so I have a light source which will illuminate the scene, and then I have a camera here which will capture the reflected light, correct? And then it's the same light falling on the object also later. But I don't know how many photons actually I'm sending. I know how many photons I'm getting back in my camera. So I need to know how many photons I'm sending into the scene. So the purpose of this reference target is to find out how many photons I'm sending. Because I know this will reflect 99. So if I'm getting 198 photons from my target, that means I am sending 200 photons into the target. And since the scene is also getting the same amount of light, I know I'm sending 200 photons into the scene, and which will tell me this one, it's 200 photons. And the reflected light, which anyway I will get from the camera. So I have all the information which I can use to for getting the reflectance. Clear? Simple now. So that's the spectral calibration stage. Then the geometric correction, which will basically correct if there is any distortion, there is any geometrical distortion in the scene. It's more complex than you think about this dispersive element and taking the picture and so on. So there could be many distortions that could happen in the imaging system. And that is the section where we do the geometric correction, and then the image registration and mosaicing. Basically, in some cases, I may have a larger object, but my camera may be able to capture only small part of it. So I would take multiple images and then do the mosaic. Any doubts about this? Okay. So it's basically repeating the same thing. We remove the dark current, normalize the image, some denoising based on what kind of illumination correction, equalization filter. I have mentioned that before, just to make uniform about the lighting. Then geometrical correction, frame average, mosaic. I'm not going to repeat these things which already mentioned. So there is a paper that you should read definitely, best practices in passive remote sensing. I will send that to Peter so you can get that in Blackboard. Targets. We use different targets of known information just to make sure that what we are getting is correct. So one is this one, what you have seen here, and the other one is a color checker. So which all this reference target, you have the information from the manufacturer about what is the reflectance of these targets. And if you're getting that correct, then it's also sure that the information that you're collecting from the other objects, unknown scene, is also correct. This target, does anyone know why different shapes So one reason is basically, assume there is a dark scene that you want to capture, this one. Then you should keep a higher exposure time or more light. And if you put more light, then what will happen is this white one, the white area will be saturated. So you cannot use that one. You can use, but then you cannot expose it more. So you can basically match your scene with any of these shades. So if you're scanning this object or a shade of this kind of a shade, then you can basically use the dark shade, which is like 12% reflectance. So if I put the same exposure on this one, this will be saturated and you cannot use that information. That's the reason why we use multiple shades. Once you have all the information, then you can do different operations. For example, if you get 10 different bands as 10 different grayscale images, you can do addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, whatever basic operation that you do in a normal image processing that you can also apply here. So, for example, if there is two bands give you complementary information, you can either combine or you can also subtract information. Sometimes you don't need to do any heavy computation to get information from a spectral imaging. You can simply subtract two bands and get information. Then you can take the ratio between two bands. There are standard bands which will give you information. For example, if you are working on agriculture related projects, they already define some bands, and if you take a ratio between these bands, you get information about the water content or the health of the plant and so on. So then statistical operations like PCA, principal compound analysis, independent compound analysis, minimum noise fraction, different statistical operations that you can use to gather information or to separate information. For example, if you have an image with 200 bands, maybe there are a lot of redundant information. So statistically, you can reduce the number of bands into maybe 200 bands to 15 bands, which will basically still give you all the information. Then dimensionality reduction, basically reducing the number of bands with at the same time having all the information, all the relevant information. Spectral unmixing, which I have some slides for later. Yeah, it's here. So spectral unmixing is a process to separate information from the same pixel. There could be different mixing that can happen when you do spectral imaging. The mixing could happen in the material level. For example, if you have two different powder and if you mix it, maybe it's possible to, then there could be a chemical mixing that could happen. There could be just a physical mixing that could happen. If you have a material A and a material B, you mix it together, then you get a combination of this one. But this A, B could be, there could be a chemical or a physical mixing. And if you add more things like any solvents or something, it could be more complicated. But when you scan, you will get, if you scan A, B, then you get maybe a spectrum. And this may be a combination of the element B and B, A and B. Is it possible to separate this from this spectrum? You may have a spectrum of A separately, and you may have a spectrum of B separately. you have three different curves, three different transmittance curve, reflectance curve. Is it possible to do the unmixing from this curve based on these two? So there are different unmixing techniques. But for now, get this term spectral mixing, which is sometimes it's complicated, sometimes very easy. It's very commonly used in remote sensing and all different purposes. So in remote sensing, to some extent, it is easy. So these ones, which I said pure spectrums, is called N members. And we use N member to separate information from the from this one. How to visualize a spectral image? Normally in case of a RGB image, we can choose three bands, or it's already three bands, and when you stack it together, you have a color image. That's how you visualize the RGB image. But in spectral imaging, there are hundreds of different bands, right? So how do you visualize it? How do you see the... So you can basically take the individual grayscales and visualize it. Visualize means how to see the image. You can basically take the individual bands and see the image. The next way is to take any RGB images or corresponding to red, green and blue in that area, and you can combine and see it as a color image. Then false color image, you can pick any bands and then you assign red, green and blue and visualize, then it's a false color image. Then PCA or ICA or different statistical, so there you basically reduce the number of bands and just assign red, green and blue and just visualize it. There is also other visualization tools. For example, this is a spectral image. You can see any point I click, you can see the spectrum.
Can you switch off the light? It's
just
not that much contrast.
You can choose different bands. You can overlay the bands. So basically, color to IR region. So there are many different ways to visualize. When you get the slides, you can also just try. Spectral library, as I mentioned, the spectrum corresponding to the pure material that you can actually, so here A and B, you can use it as a spectral library. These are called, these pure members are called N members, and a collection of N members is called a library, spectral library. And here what you do basically is, you know, this painting, have you seen this painting? If not, you can...
Yes.
So here, corresponding to different points, there are some areas where there is a pure pigments. Those areas we took it as a spectral library, and then the overall image we check, or does this spectrum exist in different pixels? If yes, then we classify that as a that pigment. Did you get confused?
No, yeah,
okay.
I don't think
so. That means I have a painting, and in some areas of this painting there are pure pigments. So that pure pigment spectrums will form a library. So I have five pixels. Five pigments. So the spectrum corresponding to these five pigments forms a library. And then I will make a classification algorithm or a mapping algorithm. In that mapping algorithm, what I will do is I will go to every point in the spectral image and I will check which one of this spectrum in the spectral library match with that point. And if it is matching with that point, that means that the pigment at that point is matching, the one that is matching. So then I will make different classes, and that's what you see here. It's basically a comparison with your spectral shape. And this comparison, yes.
Yeah, do you have to know the library beforehand, or do you kind of use PCA to get to the library?
There are many different ways. In some cases, we may not know. We may not know the specific bands. In some cases, yes. For example, we did the scanning of the screen, and when we did that, a couple of years back, some people did the point spectroscopy, and they found this point corresponding to this spectrum. So we used that points as the spectral library. And then we try to compare that. When I said there is mapping algorithm or pigment classification algorithm, there are n number of different techniques to do this classification algorithm. Some are based on the curve. Curve itself, it could be different magnitude. Some of them compare both magnitude and shape. Some of them compare only shape. So one of the most commonly used is spectral angle mapper. So basically you compare two vectors with a threshold. And if it is within a threshold, then you assign it as one class. And if it is outside of that threshold, you assign another class. Softwares used. NV is one of the most commonly used, but it's an expensive one. Then the optics, some of these are actually open source. Spectral Python, it's an open source software for spectral imaging. We have, I think, one or two licenses for NV in the lab. Then now MATLAB has a toolbox on hyperspectral imaging. Some of the commercial systems, these are some of the popular systems. HiSpec, it's by a Norwegian company, Norsk Elektro Optik. They are located in Oslo, so they make these systems. Specking, this is a imaging system from a Finnish manufacturer. Then Redwall, I think it's American. IMEC, Belgium. So there are Cubits, it's German. So there are different systems. These are some of the commonly used ones. Yeah, the main challenges that we discussed earlier. Huge amount of data, lack of standardization, quality evaluation. You will listen to different lectures on quality related stuff in the coming session. Then you will see, okay, RGB, it's possible to evaluate the quality by asking people. You can evaluate the RGB image and say that, okay, this is a good one, this is a poor quality. But spectral imaging is not merely mean for visualization, just for visualization. So how would you actually evaluate the quality of a spectral image? That's a challenge. File data formats. Many of the data come from these systems is not very much standardized. So there is no standard format like TIFF or JPEG or those kind of things. It's very much based on each producer. Lack of software for different application. So NV is a software which is mainly made for remote sensing purpose, but not for close range applications. So there is a lack of softwares. We stop here, or you have energy to continue? What do we do here?
You have some slides, how many slides remaining in this session? Or
okay, I think we can take it in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah, 15 minutes I will continue on this.
Yeah.
We lost some time in the beginning,
yeah.
So I apologize for that. So then we take a lunch break and we regather at 1:15.
And come back with your doubts if there is any.
Most of them before that. But this year,